Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have as my guest one of my past clients. Chris Lonergan is president of Communications Partners based in San Diego and oversees a sister company, Benefit Elect, in Bend, Oregon, which was started by his father. Chris is involved in several key areas of the companies, including client engagement, strategic partnerships, and ongoing employee communications education. He enjoys developing short and long-term strategies that help businesses achieve their goals. Chris graduated from the University of Colorado with a degree in communications and went on to work in the health insurance industry. Chris, welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks, Jonathan. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your experience growing up, your childhood, your dad being an entrepreneur. What was it like to grow up in your household? Give us a little background about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. Now, happy to do that. And the family business has been around longer than I have. My folks really stumbled into this niche that we're in and discovered it, built a business, and spent their entire 45-year career committed to this particular niche and industry. So obviously, I've been around it my entire life, very familiar with it, was witness to a lot of the ups and downs and the evolution of the company as well as the niche. As far as just being around my father, very much a hero figure in my life. I was always coaching Little League and soccer while running a business full time, and spent many nights on the road, but was always back in time for sports games and to be with his family. Had a lot of admiration for both my parents and my father's ability to kind of handle both sides, the family and the running of a business.
So it's kind of interesting, like, you know, you're one of the people that I identify as a disruptive successor. You're in my book in a little part. Your dad was your hero. And was it difficult to make the decision to hire a coach? It's kind of sort of says to your dad, maybe like, dad, you know, what you did was great, but for me to get to where I want to get to, I need some outside help. What, tell us a little bit about, was that a difficult decision experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't something that just happened overnight. It was a conversation that continued to happen over probably a several year period. Following college, I went and worked for a Fortune 200 company. I did that for about 9 years. And after several years of talking with my father about, should I join this business? Should I not? What should I do? We made the decision to move forward and join the business. I came into it, you know, really thinking that we had an amazing business and everything was just shiny and perfect and polished. And I got there and realized that we were doing a lot of things really well, but there were a lot of other areas within the company that needed some help, needed some improvement. At the time, I couldn't exactly put my finger on what it was specifically or why, but I just knew, I had a feeling that something needed to be done. One of the things that I realized very early on is that my father is an amazing salesperson. He's very much a harmonist as a personality type. has that ability, whether it's on the road in sales presentations or even inside the office, to make people feel very good, to make people feel very, very trustworthy of him and our business and such. Always felt that he had the ability to overcome any sort of challenges that he had in business with his sales ability, the ability to always be bringing in enough business to overcome some of those challenges, maybe fallouts and such. For all of his success in talents and sales, I don't know that he had the same ability or even interest on the internal mechanics of running a company and such. And you know, he absolutely did what he was best at and focused on what he was best at, and obviously did something very well because he kept the company around for a little over four decades and still going strong today. But I mentioned I couldn't figure out what exactly was wrong internally, and I didn't understand right away exactly how to fix a lot of that. But I knew that something needed to be done, and I think a lot of that was driven by the need to regain my own sanity as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so like joining the family business, you started to realize that there were problems that were happening within the company. Your dad was a terrific salesman, so you were, I'm sure, pretty typical. He was probably outselling the ability of the company to produce stuff. And I'm guessing that's where some of the problems that you saw lied.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I really came in the first year or two and took every piece of my father's advice. And one of the first things that he told me is go out and sell anything and everything, every piece of business that you can drag in the door. That's an opportunity. It's a new relationship. We can get into a new product or niche or what have you. And so I did take that advice, and I too went out and was just a sales machine. I was in the field. I was relentless for the first couple of years. And we did, in the first 2 to 3 years, we doubled the revenue in the company, but we didn't have the support, the structure, the processes to support that. And so that headache and stress just continued to grow and mount with the size of our sales and revenues that were growing at the same time.
Yeah. So how long was it that you were there before you started to realize that having an outside business coach might be useful?
You know, it was probably around 2 to 3, maybe even 4 years. I don't recall the moment, but just based on my childhood and some of the things that I had shared, I just always felt that everything my father touched turned to gold, and I was going to be walking into this magnificent, well-oiled machine and had all this structure. And after a few years of some of the stresses and the problems from not having those processes began to mount, I did realize at that moment that I needed to do something, that we were not going to stumble into something. I really needed to take the reins and take action. So at that moment, I just started reading anything and everything I could get my hands on. I was reading business books. I was reading blogs. I was reading LinkedIn. You name it. I was talking to other business owners in the community, other clients of ours that are business owners as well, and just trying to get all advice I could get my hands on. That was really where it started.
We met actually on LinkedIn, as I recall. So you were pretty receptive to my suggesting that we get together. But what were some of the business books that you read that were really influential to you?
Sure. I read a number of them. The one that really stood out to me that had, you know, kind of that defining moment where I realized I needed to take action was when I read Built to Sell. And really what it is a dialogue between an entrepreneur and a mentor. And the whole book kind of goes through some of the challenges that entrepreneur is having at the onset of their business and how they transform the business and simplify it. And I just found myself nodding the entire time I'm reading the book, saying, yes, 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 that's me. That's my situation. You know, these are some of the things that I'm dealing with, some of the pain points and challenges and frustrations. So I realized in that moment, as much as I love my father and as much of a tremendous salesperson as he is, I needed to have that mentor in my life. I needed somebody to have that constant dialogue, to be able to bounce ideas, to coach me and teach me. And that's when I became much more receptive to coaching, and one thing led to another, and we met. And
yeah, it's a great book, actually. And I bet it took a while before you finished reading that book before we started working together. Sure. But I hear some similar feedback, people reading my books and saying, I'm going to need some help implementing this stuff. And I know it's going to be a while because they're still working through some conversations with their brother in one case, their father in another. So at some point you started to realize that you needed maybe to review the strategy of the family's business when you took over. There were two businesses still at that point in time. I think they were maybe under one roof, not separated. But tell us a little bit about some of the strategy shifts that you made after you did your assessment analysis of the business and decided, okay, this is what needs to change.
Sure. Yeah, there were quite a few areas going into our engagement. Really, the number one area of focus for me at the onset was on hiring. That had been a tremendous pain point for me. I felt like I was getting good people that I had a good gut feel about, and we would engage. I would onboard them. We'd go through what I'd call a 6-month honeymoon phase. And you would just start to see the signs, the red flags. We'd make it to 9 months, a year, and probably was guilty more often than not of keeping people around longer than I should have before we moved them out of the company. But that was really one of the first things that I wanted to focus on. We definitely got there. One of the other strategies that in hindsight, should have been incredibly obvious to me, but it wasn't at the time, was the org chart within the company. At the moment, everybody in our entire organization reported to me. And so it stands to reason why I felt like I was losing my mind and I was just in email jail constantly. And so just a restructure of that org chart in reducing the amount of individuals that were reporting to me. An absolute game changer, and a very simple change that we were able to make with just instant impact. Another one that comes to mind, just a key moment that stands out in my mind and something that I continue to revisit on probably a quarterly basis is an activity called Vital Few, Trivial Many. And so inside this activity or exercise, I was asked to make a list of 20 different functions within the company that I was responsible for. And I remember laughing a little bit as I was asked to put 20, because I was thinking, well, I probably have 40 or even more. But I put down the most important 20 at that time. We identified the ones that I enjoyed the most. I felt like I was the best at, I could do for hours on end and not realize any time had gone by. And we moved those down to the vital few. I think there were 5.
Yep.
The remaining 15, we slid over into a trivial mini column, and we eliminated, downgraded, outsourced. We went and we found a new home for those remaining 15. And I still was not bought in at that moment. And I just recall laughing, thinking, I'll give this a try. I'm a bit desperate at the moment, but this is going to implode and it will circle back and become just a big bomb sitting on my desk. But I was wrong. And within 2 weeks of it, and I really truly was committed to this exercise, within 2 weeks, I immediately started seeing the impact in a lot of different areas: the power of outsourcing, the power of delegating, the power of eliminating some of these trivial things that didn't turn out to be all that important anyways, once they were eliminated. So it was a tremendous exercise and continues to be one that I revisit every 3 months or so.
Yeah, that's actually, if a coach has a silver bullet and it's a tool, that's the tool for me. That's my silver bullet. It's, mm-hmm. It's incredibly powerful, and it definitely should be repeated quarterly. And once you're doing it, you get your team to do it as well, so that everyone is delegating the proper stuff and elevating themselves to the org chart. So, question: I think at the time when we were working together, I was still a certified scaling up coach, Rockefeller Habits coach, and I think I had you, or you had read that book, Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. But I think you also read Traction by Gino Wickman. And I'm wondering if either of those books had a more compelling impact or you thought were more useful. Sure. Any comments you have on those?
Yeah, you bet. Both tremendous books and methodology and definitely had a lot of great takeaways. We initially engaged in scaling up and made a transition, and I don't recall exactly when, over to EOS. And one of the things that you had suggested at the time is maybe take a look at a book called What the Heck is EOS? Mm-hmm. And so I read that. It's a pretty quick read. I think it only took a day or two. And we transitioned into EOS primarily for the simplicity of it and just the expedited application to the company. We're able to implement, get that thing up and running, if I recall, in a matter of a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It was also something I feel that was easy to explain to the staff. I had some staff read the book as well. So when we did roll that out, there was excitement, there was awareness, they understood the direction we were going and why.
Yeah, EOS, which stands for Entrepreneurial Operating System, is a much simpler methodology. It really is pretty light on strategy and on financial or cash tools, but it does a really good job on the people and accountability and execution side. It's great for running meetings, meeting rhythms, priorities. So really pretty useful, pretty easy to grasp. And I think also really key difference with that book and Scaling Up is when you read Scaling Up, you feel like you have to read 500 other books. And it's great. It references a lot of the intellectual property of other authors, which Traction, the book, does not. So it makes it pretty easy for most teams. So that's good. So developing metrics and holding people accountable. I imagine that stimulates a certain amount of fear in people in your team. Did you see that? What was the experience like if you did?
Sure. Yeah. Admittedly, that was probably the biggest concern that I had was I feared the fear that the employees themselves were going to have because in the era. Prior to my joining the company, things were a bit of a free-for-all. There was limited to no accountability. There were a lot of band-aid methodology, just putting band-aids here and there. And sometimes we were profitable, sometimes we were not, but we didn't measure anything or really track anything or really know if our pricing was accurate, what our retention was, and so forth. So rolling out levels of measurement, I did have concern. That employees would be scared off by the accountability associated with having a metric, an individual metric, a ROC. But we used EOS to explain what we were doing, why we were doing it. As a company, in our efforts to build company culture, we talk a lot about being a part of something bigger than the individual themselves. And that led really well into measurement. We could show individuals on the team, how their individual accomplishments, their measurements, their ROCs fed into department ROCs, which also fed into overall company goals. And once we were able to paint that picture and demonstrate where we were going, what we were doing, this is an exercise to help you, the individual, help the department, help the overall company. This is how you be part of something bigger than yourself. I think that was a turning point for people in their minds where the excitement was generated. This is not an exercise in embarrassing anybody, pointing anybody's failures out. We also explained to them that we were not looking for 100% completion on any of these measurables. And a lot of times we were just looking at 80% for being a passing grade, so to speak, as well. So,
right.
Yeah, absolutely some fear initially, but in my memory, I think we had that overcome within a couple of weeks or maybe the first month of rolling this out.
So obviously your dad hadn't done this before, so this was a new thing. Was he supportive of it? Do you think that there was some reluctance or resistance? I remember he participated in our first retreat. And then I think he realized after that, you know what, you guys should run the company And I'm going to step aside, but I don't know that this was part of his way, because he was really a salesman as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't know. I don't recall any sort of concern on his part. I felt that I was able to explain what we were doing and why we were doing it and the return that I believed we had on the investment. I think some of my biggest challenges that I continued to have was him entering at various points in the picture and assigning people or telling people to do this and that and just disrupting things in the moment or sidetracking a lot of things. But once I was able to go back and explain to him how something that seemed so minor to him had, you know, a fairly significant impact, and here's why. And then once I was able to articulate that and point that out, granted, I had to do it several times. It wasn't just on one occasion. He was able to kind of connect the dots and understand, you know, the purpose of what we were doing.
I think you came up with a rule around repetition and communicating with your father. It takes 8 times,
sure,
to get through to them. So yeah, I've recently been working with a client where my client has mentioned things probably 8, maybe only 4 times or 5 times. But now when I came in and talked about the same concept, all of a sudden it seems like a great idea. It's interesting how sometimes when consultants or coaches show up and say the same thing that maybe the disruptive successor has been saying, suddenly, you know, it's heard. It's been validated.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So, all right. So, you've got most of the work we did was probably around Communication Partners, which is based in San Diego. And just so people understand what it is, it's a marketing communications firm specifically for corporations, larger corporations, to roll out their benefits administration programs and communicate those to employees. And then you have the Bend, Oregon company, a sister company, which is a software platform, software as a service, for these large corporations who need complex benefit administration tracking. Now you manage, we hired a president for both businesses, which freed you up to do more CEO stuff, I guess. You manage the Bend, Oregon, or oversee it remotely. What kind of challenges is it managing remotely, even if it's just managing remote teams or remote workers or virtual, you know, working from home folks? What kind of challenges have you encountered?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest challenges is just working with two separate companies. They're very similar, but they're also very different. Communication Partners, I think of much more as a product company, Benefit Elect much more as a service company. So just that daily toggling back and forth has always been a bit of a challenge and continues to be. This work from remote work environment absolutely brings its challenges. It's absolutely something that I feel even 18 months into it, we're continuing to learn our way through this and to overcome new obstacles and challenges. One of which just really starts with the whole employee life cycle from the hiring process that had historically always been done in person, and we've got our hiring processes that are a series of meetings and finalists and such. Transitioning all of that into a remote environment certainly has its challenges. And I think we just need to be much more patient with the process and take our time a little bit more, and maybe add another meeting or two here and there to really get comfortable with the process as well. Some of the other challenges, obviously, going from having just daily stand-up meetings, impromptu meetings in the hall, all of that's gone. And granted, we've got these wonderful programs like Microsoft Teams and Zoom and such. And it's been a wonderful tool to have. We're able to see each other face-to-face and do so as well. But it just takes that diligence. The other part of it is making sure that we always have the camera on. Just eliminate any opportunities for distractions, multitasking, When we're getting that, obviously the quality of the meeting goes down when somebody's only 50% engaged because they don't have the camera on. That's been a big one. We do a lot of outbound communications as a leadership team. Sometimes it's spontaneous where we reach out and check in with people, making sure that we have frequent communication. Also just sending nice little goodies, surprises to people. It might be lunch, it might be some flowers, might be a snack. No reason. It's really just because, and it's just a great way to increase morale. And you know, kind of catch people surprised, but in a good way. We do a lot of virtual games as well. We did a geocaching virtual game with the company, which was great just for kind of collaboration and some good banter and get some competitive juices flowing. But there's a lot of games that you can play through some of these programs that bring the team together. We can take a half day on Friday and go engage in something like that. And even though we're not together, it feels like we are. We're having a good time and kind of making the most of this new environment.
Super interesting. I remember when I was getting some advice around dating during COVID, someone suggested that I call in from the local restaurant and have it delivered to her place, to my place. We would sit and eat together. I never got that far, but I did have some virtual wine dates. So if you're single men and women out there who are not in the same locale, you can do that. I think that's really interesting. So the meetings, better, worse, different, unsure? What do you think? Virtual versus in person?
In my personal opinion, and I know this might not be popular with everyone, I don't think that there's a substitute for in the flesh, in person meetings. The quality of the meeting that takes place, the attention, oftentimes the preparation that people take in advance of these meetings is always better in person. From a client in a sales outside of the office, I feel there's a lot that happens in the hallway or the parking lot. Sure. After the meeting, but we're making the most of it. One of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about is the quality of the meeting. The meeting has to be a 9 or a 10 out of 10. Otherwise, we're not going to have the meeting. We're going to nix it. We're going to cut it short. We need to make sure that we're considerate of everyone's time, our own time as well. And so I guess the biggest outcome here is we spend a lot more time actually ranking the meeting and rating the meeting and reflecting the meeting to make sure that they're all quality meetings.
That's great. That's great. Actually, I've come up with a little worksheet for how to figure out how to rate the meeting on a scale of 1 to 10. And it's like there's 5 areas and they each get 0, 1, or 2 points. So people could be like, okay, that wasn't just intuitive. That was based on a methodology. So what about one-on-one? Like you and I did all of our coaching virtually like this over Zoom calls. I find it quite effective, certainly for me, involving travel time. What about when you're doing one-on-ones with a colleague or mentoring someone or, you know, even in our coaching? Just as effective or?
Yeah, but once again, the camera has to be on. Otherwise, okay, I know for myself, my attention, you know, drops off if I'm staring at a screen and I'm the only one that's on camera.
Yep.
I think that's a big one as well. This is it. At first, I felt that the video calls were a bit of a Band-Aid and the pandemic was going to be over sooner. But this has dragged on. It's at 18 months. We've gone fully virtual with one of our companies and may consider going virtual with the second one. So it is something that's much more here to stay. And I think part of knowing that and realizing that, this is how we're going to communicate for the foreseeable future. It's kind of changed a little bit of my perception on it and feelings towards this type of communication.
Certainly a game changer in managing the business. Yeah,
it is.
Any other game changers? Sounds like the org chart. And the vital few trivial many were like game changing exercises as well.
You know, it is absolutely. One of the other game changing strategies for me, and you know, most people will probably laugh at this. When I got involved with Communication Partners in the family business, I immediately thought I need to reinvent the company. And part of reinventing the company is just opening up to all these new products, and we're going to get into all sorts of deliverables, and we're going to expand our portfolio. And all I did was create more challenges for us as a company. I was able to go out and sell these new deliverables and products and bring them in. But what it did was paralyze a lot of our staff that were not experts in delivering on these. And so where I'm going with this is I quickly did a 180 and I came back to the strategy of simplifying everything within our business, from the products to the processes, to making sure that we have assembly lines, so to speak, in-house, where everybody that is touching these deliverables is an expert in one or two functions that they're responsible for. And so that just elevated their happiness, elevated work quality, expedited turnaround times, and the end result, happier clients. We just immediately saw our net promoter score climb up. Knock on wood, we've increased it every single year. We're at an 88, and I keep thinking,
wow,
we're not going to see it climb any further, and somehow it does. But I think a lot of that can be attributed to a heavy focus on simplifying our business.
Super important. And the employees, do they experience the same thing? And do you measure employee net promoter score?
We do. Yeah. We use a program and we measure on a quarterly basis, ENPS as well. Mm-hmm. And just keep a finger on the pulse on ENPS. And it's a great program. We get instant feedback with a measurement and then opportunities for individual anonymous feedback.
Wow, amazing. Mm-hmm. Sounds like things have gotten a lot better with this. So tell us a little bit about your dad and what's his involvement with the business at this time. And I know that there's been a succession transition that started before we met. Is it still going on? Is succession transition a long-term like thing, or is it contained to a shorter term? What's been your experience with your father?
Yeah, with we've got my father in a great place. He's you're going to have to drag him off the field. That's really his personality type. But at the moment, he's spending more time doing the things that he really enjoys in his semi-retirement. And he's working just enough hours a week to keep a hand on things and still feel engaged and to stimulate his mind. He still likes to learn. He still likes to be involved and still likes to be a part of many of the relationships that we have that he has. And has built over the years as well. And so this has allowed him to create a really nice balance for himself and freed him up to do some more traveling and to spend some time that he didn't have before because of business. So I think we've got him in a great position. As far as transitioning of the company, it's an ongoing process that we're working on. We did engage with a law firm that created a valuation for the company and have worked with our accounting team as well on a transition of equity. But this is over an extended period of time.
Yep. And Chris, you have siblings, I forget.
I've got a younger brother and he was given every opportunity to join and he came up in professional sports and moved over to the business side in professional sports and is on a really nice path and wants to stay on that path.
Yeah. One thing that never gets really discussed in family businesses is, or because it really belongs to families and not the business, which is if one sibling gets, you know, the equity in the business, what does the other one get? Well, maybe they get the real estate, but maybe there isn't any real estate, or maybe they're waiting for a much longer time. Have you seen that with any, either in your business or other family businesses that you're aware of?
You know, not as much that I'm aware of. And the plan that we're on is a true earnout plan that we're on. So it's not as though a large sum of equity was just handed over. It's been earned out at this point over an 8 or 9 year period, and we're continuing to do so.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, if things were to go, you know, sideways and I would no longer be in position to be earning that out. You know, there'd be a reason for it.
So my experience of your dad is he's a pretty easygoing guy, but he has a really strong ego. And is it difficult for him to let go?
Absolutely. And that probably goes back to some of the comments about reinserting himself here and there. I think a lot of that had been driven by ego and that's just, this was his baby that he and mom created in the 70s, and just a big part of his identity for so long. And so for the better part of his entire life. And so, yes, absolutely. I think there's been some ego that has gotten in the way and made it challenging. But at the same time, he's seeing the company do things that we've never done before. We're getting into spaces, markets, sales channels. We're doing a lot of things that I think are making him really proud at this point. And so I'm sure ego has gotten us into certain situations. You know, what we're doing right now as a company and the way that it's evolved, I think we've been able to overcome some of that.
Oh, that's great. So what advice might you give to a next generation leader who is feeling resistance from their mother or father and letting go? Sure. Maybe if you were talking to your younger self 5 or more years ago, like what would you counsel that person on?
Sure. I don't know if I have all the right answers. I'm still continuing to learn a lot, but I think the one thing I would go to and the advice I would have would be patience. Time has a way of taking care of a lot of things. So be patient, be committed, communicate really well, speak what's on your mind, be honest, don't beat around the bush. But patience has probably been the one key thing that I've had to remind myself of. It doesn't need to happen overnight. There's nothing wrong if it takes 5 years, 8 years, 9 years.
Yeah, that's great advice. Must be really tough for some people who have impulsivity or, really pushing, burning desires to make things happen fast. Sure. You've been really patient. You guys have built a couple of very nice businesses and you've built nice lifestyles for all of you. So I think it's success.
Well, I'm incredibly lucky to be in the position that I am. I acknowledge it all the time. I say it to myself. I say it to my father and to my wife. And so just, remembering to acknowledge the fact that we've been very blessed and we're very lucky. I think that's an important component as well.
Chris, you both show grace and gratitude, and people can learn from that. Those are great things.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. All right. So, Chris, thanks so much for being on the show today. I think you shared some real pearls of wisdom for people to take away. And it was great working with you as a client and having you as a friend. Thank you so much. Folks, if you enjoyed this episode, please tell others about it. If you have a family business and you'd like to be on my show, please reach out to me. If you'd like to contact Chris, his contact information will be in the show notes if you want to learn more about his businesses. Thanks for joining us today. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.